11. The killing time plunged intact through the third wave of ancient culture ships. They rushed on towards accession. It fended off a few more of the warheads and missiles which had been directed at it, turning a couple of the latter back upon their own ships for a few moments before they were detected and destructed. The hulk of the attitude adjuster fell astern behind the departing fleet, coasting and twisting and tumbling in hyperspace, still heading away from and outstripping the killing time as it braked and started to turn. There was only a vestigial fourth wave. 14 ships. They were targeting it now. Had it known there were so few in the final echelon, the killing time would have attacked the second wave of ships. Ah, well, luck counted too. It watched the attitude adjuster a moment longer to ensure it really was tearing itself apart. It was. It turned its attention to the remaining 14 craft. On its suicide trajectory, it could take them all on and stand a decent chance of destroying perhaps 4 of them before its luck ran out, maybe 6 if it was really lucky. Or it could push away and complete its brake-turn-accelerate manoeuvre to make a second pass at the main fleet. Even if they'd be waiting for it this time, it could reckon on accounting for a good few of them. Again, in the 4-8 range. Or it could do this. It pulled itself round the edge of the 14 ships in the rump of the fleet as they reconfigured their formation to meet it. Bringing up the rear, they'd had more warning of its attack, and so had had time to adopt a suitable pattern. The killing time ignored the obvious challenge and temptation of flying straight into their midst, and flew past and round, targeting only the outer 5 craft nearest it. They gave a decent account of themselves, but it prevailed, dispatching 2 of them with engine field implosions. This was, it had always thought, a clean, decent, and honourable way to die. The pair of wreckage shells coasted onwards. The rest of the ships sped on, unharmed, chasing the main fleet. Not one of the ships turned back to take it on. The killing time continued to break, oriented towards the fast-vanishing war fleet and the region of the accession. Its engine fields were gouging great livid tracks in the energy grid as it back-pedaled furiously. It encountered the ROU, which had dropped aft with engine damage, falling back towards it as the killing time slowed, and the other craft coasted onward and struggled to repair its motive power units. The killing time attempted to communicate with the ROU, was fired upon, and tried to take the craft over with its effector. The ROU's own independent automatics detected the ship's mind starting to give in. They tripped a destructive sequence, and another hypersphere of radiation blossomed beneath the skein. "Shit!" thought the killing time. It scanned the hypervolumes around itself. Nothing threatening. "Well, damn me," it thought as it slowed. "I'm still alive." This was the one outcome it hadn't anticipated. It ran a systems check, totally unharmed, apart from the self-inflicted degradation to its engines. It slackened off the power, dropping back to normal maxima and watching the readouts. Significant degradation from here in about 100 hours. Not too bad. Self-repairing would take days at all engines stop. Warhead stocks down to 40%. Remanufacturing from first principles would take 4-7 hours, depending on the exact mix it chose. Plasma chambers at 96% efficiency. About right for the engagement system use profile, according to relevant charts and graphs. Self-repair mechanisms champing at the bit. It looked around, concentrating on the view astern. No obvious threats. It let the self-repairs make a start on 2 of the 4 chambers. Full reconstruction time, 204 seconds. Entire engagement duration, 11 microseconds. it had felt longer, but then that was only natural. Should it make a second pass? It pondered this while it signaled the shoot them later and a couple of other distant mines with details of the engagements. Then it copied to the Steely Glint without leaving the comm channels open. It needed time to think. It felt excited, energized, repurified by the engagement it had undergone. Its appetite was whetted. A further pass would be no-holds-barred multi-destructional, not a series of semi-defensive side actions, while it concentrated on searching for one individual ship. This next time, it could really get nasty. On the other hand, it had inflicted a more than reasonable amount of damage on the fleets, for no ship loss whatsoever, and a barely significant degradation to its operational capacity. It had ignored the advice of a superior mind in wartime, but it had triumphed. It had gambled and won. And there was a kind of unexpected elegance in cashing in its gains now. To pursue the matter further might look like obsessive self-regard, like ultra-militarism, especially now that the original object of its ire had been bested. Perhaps it would be better to accept whatever praise and or calumny might now be heaped upon it, and resubmit itself to the jurisdiction of the culture's war command structure, though it was starting to have its doubts about the part of the Steely Glint in all this. It drew level with the debris clouds left by the two ships destroyed in the final wave of the war fleet. It let them drop astern. The wreck of the attitude adjuster came tumbling slowly towards it in hyperspace, coasting, slowing, drifting gradually back up towards the skein. Externally, it looked unharmed. The killing time slowed to keep pace with the slackly somersaulting craft. It probed the attitude adjuster carefully with its sensors, its effectors targeted on the other ship's mind, ready on the instant. In human terms, this was like taking somebody's pulse while keeping a gun stuck in their mouth. The attitude adjuster's weakened engine fields were still tearing at what was left of its mind, teasing and plucking and forcing it apart strand by strand, demolishing and shredding and cauterizing the last remaining quanta of its personality and senses. It looked like there'd been a dozen or so affronters aboard. They were dead, too, killed by stray radiations from the mine's self-destruction. The killing time felt a modicum of guilt, even self-disgust, at what it had forced upon what was still, in a sense, a sister ship, even while another part of its selfhood relished and gloried in the dying craft's agonies. The sentimental side won out. It blitzed the stricken vessel with a profusion of plasma fire from its two operational chambers, and kept station with the expanding shell of radiation for a few moments, paying what little respect the traitor ship might be due. The killing time came to its decision. It signaled the Steely Glint, informing the GCV that it would accept suggestions from now on. It would harry the war fleet if that was required, or it would join in whatever stand was to be made near Sperai, if that was thought to be the best use that could be made of it. It would probably still die, but it would meet its fate as a loyal and obedient component of the culture, not some sort of rogue ship pursuing a private feud. Then it slowly ramped its engines back to normal full power, pulling itself forward to a vanishingly brief moment of rest before powering onwards, accelerating hard, and setting a hyperbolic course, skirting round the fleet's more direct route, heading for the location of the accession. It should still get there before the war fleet.